power. They were poets and playwrights, and they were what you would really call a journalist. I mean, they wrote about things that happened around them. They were often direct participants in the events. So the participant journalism of a Tom Wolfe in the 70s, that's really actually the oldest kind of journalism. It's much more modern that the journalists had to act like they weren't a real person with real commitments and a citizen that's engaged in the life of their community, but are supposed to act like some kind of a zombie standing outside of the real world of mortals, you know, describing it like they were insects under a glass. I think it's rather foolish, pompous. It does come out of journalism schools. I didn't go to journalism school. I learned how to do journalism just by doing it. And I learned how to do journalism by doing it about things that I was involved in. So I actually don't know any other way to do it. I sometimes try to stand outside and be a really dull, opaque third-person reporter. It's just as a discipline to see how it goes. And I can do that. But it's not real journalism.
We've been speaking with Chris King of the St. Louis American. They're online at stlamerican.com. Thank you very much, Chris King, for joining us today on Counterspin.
Thank you.
And that's it for Counterspin for this week. Counterspin is produced by FAIR, the National Media Watch Group based in New York. The show is engineered by Kelly Spivey. With me is Peter Hart. I'm Janine Jackson. Thanks for listening to Counterspin.
Welcome to this podcast for The Rhythm Jam, where I'll be in conversation with sought-after trombonist and bandleader Emily Asher. Emily is currently touring the West Coast with two bands, Emily Asher's Garden Party and Endangered Species, and she'll be in Portland for several days over the next 2 weeks. Tune in for full details of venues, dates, exclusive news, and more on this amazing young group of jazz musicians keeping this important music alive. To listen to the Rhythm Jam podcast, go to kboo.fm and search for Rhythm Jam under the Programs tab.
I'm Rusty Butler, a Siletz tribal member. I got in trouble with the law when I was 14 years old and spent my teenage years behind the bars. My culture and traditions helped me find my way. I now work with the Siletz youth in my community. Hear my story on Prison Pipeline, November 3rd at 6:30 p.m.
Nanta Srinagi Thai, Nanta Ho 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 Nanta Ho.
This KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Sisters of the Road, celebrating its 35th anniversary with co-founder Jenny Nelson and music by Casey Neal and Gauri Raj. The Sisters of the Road 31st anniversary celebration is open to the public and takes place Friday, November 7th from 6 to 9 p.m. at 133 Northwest 6th Avenue. More at sistersoftheroad.org. This KBOO program has also been made possible by, in part, by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Portland Saturday Market. From our hands to yours, celebrating 41 years of American arts and crafts, freshly prepared food with an international flavor, and local music every Saturday and Sunday from March 1st through Christmas Eve in Waterfront Park. Local artisans, international food, live music, PortlandSaturdayMarket.org. And finally, this KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from, I'm not sure.
At the dawn of the day, all the darkened kitchens, the mill of gray, radiance that the sun discloses. Oh, hear the people singing bread and roses.
Welcome to Bread and Roses. I'm your host, Delphine Crescenzo. Bread and Roses is a collective of women-identified radio activists bringing you feminist news and public affairs programming every Friday at 6 p.m. here on your community radio station, KBOO 90.7 FM. Women have had this forum on KBOO since 1978. Yes, that's 35 years. We always welcome new collective members, so if you would like to host, produce and engineer with us, please contact KBOO's volunteer manager at volunteer@kboo.org. You can also find Bread and Roses on the web, kboo.fm/breadandroses. There you can listen to past shows, even share comments or show ideas. And of course, you can like us on Facebook. We are KBOO Bread and Roses. And same there, please suggest show ideas. And leave us some comments. Tonight on Bread and Roses, we affirm that second chances are for everyone, even though those of us who have a criminal history. SCAFE, a local nonprofit, strongly believes in that statement. In fact, SCAFE, S-C-A-F-E, stands for Second Chances Are for Everyone. And this organization exists to, quote, provide support services to promote employment, empowerment, and community engagement for men in transition. Tonight, we welcome in the studio Emmanuel Price. He is founder and executive director of SCAFE. We are going to discuss incarceration, recidivism, barriers to employment after incarceration, and how his organization is changing things for men in transition. SCAFE is hosting their second annual fundraising event, Breaking the Cycle of Recidivism, on November 8th from 4 p.m. to 8 p.m. at the Center for Intercultural Organizing. And we will be sharing more details about this event tonight. You can also visit scafe.org for more information. Emmanuel Price, who is with us, is a native Oregonian, the great-great-nephew of Mahalia Jackson. He is a father, human rights commissioner, board member for Metropolitan Public Defender and for HIV/AIDS and hepatitis C prevention, and of course the founder of SCAFE. Emmanuel considers himself a critical thinker who has evolved with time, allowing his truth and understanding of race, social politics, and community to grow and develop and become a catalyst for the work that he does addressing racism, sexism, and recidivism. His vision is to make our community more tightly knit through educational awareness. Emmanuel is also a singer, songwriter, and producer, and we will play some of his original music on the show tonight. And you can also find his latest album on iTunes under the Emmanuel Price Project. Emmanuel, welcome back to Bread and Roses.
Thank you. You made me sound so important.
You are so important.
I'm just
a
regular person.
Well, you are that, and also important. An important regular person.
Your accent makes it really pop.
Start by telling us a little bit about the fundraiser, the annual fundraiser that's happening next week. There's lots of opportunity for people to participate there, so tell us.
Absolutely. First, thank you so much for having me back, Dale. I really appreciate the opportunity to come and just talk about community and, you know, align our beliefs together, make it happen.
Yes.
Our fundraiser is next Saturday, November 8th, from 4 to 8 p.m. This is our second fundraiser, and we are going to break the chains on recidivism. Quickly, recidivism is relapsing into an old or negative behavior that landed you into incarceration or negative environment in the first place. So we want to break that cycle and just have a lot of kumbaya moments, a lot of desserts and coffees, and kind of just bring everybody together and educate them, make them more aware of what's going on. And we also have a call to action to get people involved in SCAFE and then maybe some. We're doing something right now with Ban the Box. So there'll be chances for people to sign that petition and kind of just learn more about recidivism and what you can do to help the community, folks who are being released back into society. So I'm extremely excited, nervous, and I'm just ready for next Saturday.
Yeah. There's also silent auction, right?
Yes, there is a silent auction. Am I available to say the, or allowed to say the?
Yes, just no price.
Okay. So the silent auction is at www.32auctions.com/SkyFay2014. And we have so many amazing prizes. Mm-hmm. There's food. There's taekwondo lessons. There are fish tanks. It's so much stuff. Wow. I can't even really, you know, rattle it all off. But if you go there, you'll find it all. Or you can go to skyfay.org and click the link and it'll take you right there. And we're very close to our goal, which is so exciting.
Yeah.
I'm stoked.
Yeah. So please go ahead and contribute to the organization if you feel so inclined. And definitely show up next Saturday for the fundraising event. Desserts and coffee sounds just lovely. let's, you know, talk about, you know, less cake and coffee kind of a vibe here. But tell us about why you started SkyFay. Second chances are for everyone.
Definitely. So I created SkyFay out of my own individual and collective experience of others who were reentering society post-incarceration, seeing that there were next to no services for individuals who were transitioning back into society while encountering some of the same exact barriers that others face with employment, housing, and access to healthcare, or just small things that we kind of take for granted, like having an identification card or a social security card. So I felt that as I transitioned back into society, I was 24, 25.
Okay.
There are a lot of things that I felt that I could have used. And there are a lot of tools that I felt I could give. And it wasn't a knock to any other reentry center, because there are some great reentry centers who do the same or similar work that I do. But I just felt I had a different angle of coming at it. And since I lived and I went through that and, you know, just had several different experiences, whether it was talking to older gentlemen or younger gentlemen of the barriers they faced. I felt it was just my duty to kind of give back to my community. And I never thought that I would be incarcerated or be one of the statistics, but unfortunately I fell through the gaps. So out of my own frustration and experience, and I created SkyFay.
Yeah.
You got me nervous in here, Dale. What are you doing?
Yeah. So, you know, I really want to reflect on what you said, because, you know, what you have is the experience, right, of having gone through it. I feel like there's lots of organizations and opportunities that exist out there that are creating from people who are outside, like, but outside, I mean, you know, who have never experienced really whatever it is that they're fighting for or that they're trying to get others, right? And I feel that at times, you know, just through my own personal experiences with organizations like that, I felt that, you know, there's just something that's missing. And that's the insider perspective, right? So that insider's perspective is definitely hugely important.
It is. And oftentimes you don't get the inside perspective, or you just know people are being bussed in and bussed out. And a lot of people don't know where to get or grab that information from. And the whole thing is, like, if we're locking people up like crazy and if they're being released every day and they're coming back into our community, then it would make sense if we kind of tapped into that resource to see what systems or services they need, so they don't have to repeat the cycle of recidivism, so they don't have to continue to get out and look for work or look for housing or healthcare and get frustrated because they can't find it, in addition to not having a license or in addition to not having a social security card and just kind of all those things. So why not ask them and tap into that and see what they need? So when they get out, we kind of reduce recidivism. And that's exactly what we're doing.
Yeah, there's just something that makes me think that there's lots of people that want them to actually go back into
absolutely
their prisons, right?
It's a great design that they have. Like, it's very well thought out.
Yeah, I've gone through high school this week and felt very much like in a prison.
Sometimes those are even worse, but
yeah. I feel like we're getting ready to with high school to go there. But talk a little bit about, you know, why, in your opinion, we send people to prisons. You know, what are prisons really, like, meant to accomplish, and what do they really accomplish as far as especially the impact on the individuals that are incarcerated, you know, either from your perspective or from, you know, what you believe?
All right. before I came, I just made some footnotes. So it may sound a little computerized or is robotized the word?
Yes.
A little robotic, actually. So I'm going to read because I really wanted to make sure that I answer the question that I could really get the message across. So we have high percentages of people incarcerated in Oregon. Approximately right now, 14,600 are incarcerated. The forecast over the next few years shows that there is continual growth. And though crime may go down, the number of those incarcerated is still astronomically high, primarily in Latino and African American or low income urban communities where there's a small percentage of folks of color. But if you look behind the prison walls, we have exceedingly high percentage of those same folks who are incarcerated. And that's by design as well. You know, it's not a mystery or a myth as to why this is happening. We know why it's happening. We have all the answers. So communities where there's small populations, like I said earlier, of Black and Latino people, there have a high number that are incarcerated. And prisons are holding facilities, basically. So that's exactly what they do. They hold people accountable. They keep people caged and confined and siloed for as little to a year or to a lifetime, depending on the sentence or lack of reputable representation from attorneys or lack of money. The impact, be it good or bad or none at all, of the person who's in prison, overall, you would think that the impact would be to eliminate the urge or desire to commit crimes or to do anything that would land them back into prison in the first place, which is recidivism. But also within that, there are people who have drug and alcohol addictions, who have mental disabilities, who oftentimes don't have the cognitive thinking skills to actually process things through. So they do what's normal or what they deem is normal or kind of what they're accustomed to doing. And sometimes that is taking the medication or not taking the medication and having an episode to where they are unaware of their surroundings and they're breaking into cars or stealing, you know, some salami. There are several different variables to where, you know, people who are being incarcerated with mental barriers or, you know, addicted to substance abuse who don't have the actual sense to know this is right and this is wrong.
But still, they end up in prisons and they are asked, like everybody, to just, you know, do your time, reform, come out a fresh new person.
Right. And you would think that's what people would do. I always say that inside a correctional facility, the word is correct, but there's no corrective behavior going on inside any correctional facility. And not everybody who is a staff person in a correctional facility, they don't have the capacity to know if folks are, you know, mentally or socially or addicted to substances. All they see is a number and a person, and it devalues them as a human.
Absolutely.
So they're there to do their job. They're not there to make sure that you're being protected or that you're getting the health care or the educational needs that you may need, which is next to nothing inside. So it's just a revolving door. You go, you get out, you go back, you get out. But if we could empower the men and women who are locked up, and if we can give them some actual skill sets and tools, when they get out, they don't have to return to the same behavior. And if they return to the community, they want to return to the community that is more welcoming. And it doesn't necessarily have to look like them. But at least let's set them up for success instead of failure. Because while I was incarcerated, I saw several people get out and come back in. And it was really disheartening because that's where I saw a lot of Black and Brown and Native American folks. And I would often wonder where this person went after high school or after college. And when I got locked up, bam, that's where everybody was. And it was sad because that's where a lot of
So you reconnected, like you saw some people in there that you had grown up with.
I saw a couple of my good friends that we went to middle school and high school, and they got locked up before I did. And I went away to college and came back, and then obviously I got, you know, involved with some, made some idiot decisions and got locked up. And I saw them there. And it was more of an embrace, like, hey, man, we're glad to see you. And even though I was glad to see them, I was like, well, damn, this is not the capacity in which I wanted to see you in. Like, look at us. Like, we came from math and soccer and, and whatever to being locked up behind bars where we have no identity, we have no values, or they strip us from our values or try to. And now we have to acclimate ourselves to such a surrounding that we're never going to fit in mm-hmm. and never be used to. So mm-hmm. you make the best of what it is.
Yeah. And I wanted to, you know, piggyback a little bit on what you said around, well, first of all, they put, you know, people who prison might not be the best fit for them because of, you know, substance abuse or mental health issues. You know, and then, you know, pretty much expect without, you know, no true, I'm not sure what they think that could happen by just, you know, putting men in cages and mm-hmm. women in cages, you know, what could happen when they come out. But obviously the barriers when they come out. So talk a little bit about, you know, the barriers that society puts there, and then also talk a little bit about the barriers that your time in prison has created on top of, like what you have to process from having been isolated from society.
Oh God. Oh,
in alternate society, I feel at times, you know?
And I may look to you to ask me the follow-up question.
Sure,
please. Because these are great questions and they're so loaded. I'm trying to articulate it right and get what I mm-hmm. want to say from my brain to my lips to the microphone. So see if we do it.
Let's do it.
barriers that a lot of men and women face after they're released to society, mm-hmm. right? Well, when you get out, all you have is a identification card, which will not get you in anywhere. Mm-hmm. You know, you can't use that. You don't have if you don't have a social security card or a license or a birth certificate, it keeps you from obtaining an mm-hmm. ID or a license. Without that license or ID, that right there stops you from applying for jobs, applying for apartments. If you need assistance through the government, whether mm-hmm. it's food stamps or benefits or whatever, you can't do any of that without an ID. So being released without those key essential things that we already have, not that we take for granted, but that we've been so used to having to where they're somewhere in a shoebox in our closet somewhere. Mm-hmm. But getting out and not having access to those things, you're going to go right back. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
because if you don't work, then how are you expected to find money?
Right. And you have probationary fees. You have mm-hmm. you may have child support. You may have restitution to pay. You also need to feed yourself. You need hygiene items. You need bus passes and money to help you get to and from work or to and from the parole or probation offices or to and from an anger management class that you mm-hmm. may have to take. So there are a lot of things that you need that when you get out, you don't have access to. And if you don't have a support system or a resource to direct you in that way, mm-hmm. like I said, you're just going to commit recidivism again. Mm-hmm. Oftentimes we have a stereotype of what a convicted felon is or an ex-con is. And even with businesses, everybody, you hear the word ex-con, you're just like, oh damn, he's an ex-con, she's mm-hmm. ex-con, I don't mm-hmm. want to get hurt, I don't want to, you know, you mm-hmm. go down the list of what they are and what they are not. And oftentimes that's the first thing that we go to. Mm-hmm. And at the end of the day, folks just want to get out, return to their communities, work, contribute, shed that negative lifestyle or stereotype that so many people attach to ex-con mm-hmm. or an offender or anything like coming out of a correctional facility. Mm-hmm. And usually those are the folks who want to work, who work the hardest mm-hmm. because they have a lot to prove to themselves. Mm-hmm. They don't want to go back to prison. They don't want to violate their parole. So they get out with a made up mind. Not everybody gets out with a made up mind. You got folks who are getting out and just flipping out and going crazy and really are just institutionalized, mm-hmm. which is another whole set of problems. Yeah. And, you know, that's a whole another 3-hour show. Mm-hmm. But just those simple things, if we can help reduce some of those barriers and help eliminate some of the barriers that keep people from obtaining employment or mm-hmm. health care or, you know, access to education or transportation, we want to make sure that we do everything that we can, because I understand exactly how it feels to not have transportation or not have access to health care or food or employment. Mm-hmm. But all the while, I'm still walking around with this smile on my face like everything is good and great, when really inside a lot of people are hurting. Mm-hmm. But there's so much pride with being a man or being a woman to where you don't want everybody to know how hurt and how much damage being locked up has done to your psyche, or you come into the community and it's not accepting, and you're just like, where do I fit in? Mm-hmm. What do I do? Do I pump gas? Do I flip burgers? Who's going to let me do that? Mm-hmm. I remember I applied for a job at, can I say?
Yeah.
I applied for a job at Arby's. I was 25. Mm-hmm. And not that I thought I was above food service or anything like that, but at the time it was all I could get.
Mm-hmm.
Those fools have the nerve to tell me we're not going to hire you because of your background. I'm like, yo, I just want to wash lettuce. Like, yo, let me just, you know, rinse off some fries or something. Let me mop. And that was just another reminder of how hard that it was going to be for myself. So if I could help reduce and create mm-hmm. some additional opportunities, then that's exactly what I wanted mm-hmm. to do with Scafe. And
yeah, because in the end, it sounds like you're paying your debt to society, not just while you're incarcerated, but also after you come out.
Even, I don't want to say too much, but even as of right now, like,
how many years has it been that you've been out?
It's been 11, going on 12 years. I'm 36 now, soon to be 37. Got out when I was 24, 25. Mm-hmm. But every job that I apply for, I'm very transparent about explaining my background. It's not a secret. On applications, I've lied. And some applications, I've told the truth. And it always comes back to, we're going to go with someone else. I think I interview very well. I can speak. I can navigate that world.
Yeah.
But for 12 years, I've been continually going through hiring, firing, interviewing 3, 4, and 5 times and putting my best foot forward and having stellar references and people who speak highly of me. And it always boils down to, they say you're not qualified, or we went with someone who was more qualified for you, when I know that I can, good and damn well, I can flip a burger.
Mm-hmm.
But it always comes back to those small intricate details of my past. So unfortunately, I'm used to going through that, but it hurts, you know what I'm saying? It hurts. I don't like to
It sounds like you have to develop an extra skill of like dealing with this, when really you could use your energy doing something different, such as whatever you're doing with Scafe,
exactly.
It
takes a lot out of you, but you know, I know I'm in it. I know this is greater than me. And I know this is something that I've devoted my own money and my own time to, not to be the biggest nonprofit in the state of Oregon. But I know that I have something to offer. And I know my own experiences, which is what I experience continually every day. So it would only be right for me to make sure that I hand down some of the tools and things that I've learned and skill sets to the people who need it most.
And we're going to talk about those things in just a minute, but we're going to take a short musical break because we really want to hear your beautiful voice.
Thank
as
you.
Well as production.
Your beautiful voice.
Production. So let's go to one of your songs, that's CPR. So you're listening to Bread and Roses. I'm Del Crescenzo, and I'm here with Emmanuel Price. We're talking about Scafe. They have Second Chances Are For Everyone. They have a fundraiser coming up on the 8th of November. Make sure you check them out. Scafe.org. When we come back, we're going to talk about some of the things that Scafe is doing to lower recidivism and change things. We'll be back in a minute.
I feel the pressure on my chains. I need CPR. Cause I'm about to lose my breath. Cause she's amazing, so amazing. She's so amazing, the type I like. Wanting her is wrong, but I don't want to be right. My good side say I got a woman in my life, but my bad side telling me it's only for the night. And I've been drinking on but strong, and she's so hot, she turns me on. Heartbeat racing in my chest, I need CPR, I'm about to lose my breath. Her body fit perfect in that dress, the way she move, I'm starting to sweat. And I can't wait to take her down, bartender, order another round.
I need CPR, somebody stay. Save me, cause I'm running out of breath. Ain't got no air left, no air left. When she enters the room, she catches my attention. And every fella in the room
You're listening to Bread and Roses. I'm Del Crescenzo, and I have Emmanuel Price with me. He is the founder and current executive director for SCAFE. Second chances are for everyone. SCAFE.org is the website. And we've been talking before the break about, you know, prison, incarceration, recidivism. And Emmanuel, you laid out very well for us all the different barriers, whether psychological and emotional, but also just real legal papers, you know, things that really make life, you know, smooth for most of us. I was wondering if you can start talking a little bit about how SCAFE is changing things for men in reentry, and maybe start with what you offer around employment and career training.
Okay. And really quickly, when I started this, I started just my focus on men. Since the 2 or 3 years we've been around, it's grown. So now I am able to assist and service women and now youth.
Great.
And those areas are still under development, but you know, we've come a long way.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just glad that I can actually be able to service women and be able to help them in any way that I can. Mm-hmm. So,
is there, just to put you on the spot, mm-hmm. I know you didn't want a surprise question.
Is there
different barriers between, the barriers that men versus women face?
Yes. Oftentimes it's almost a little bit easier for a woman to find employment, but at the same time, there's so much sexism and so much, patriarchalness that goes along with that, to where even though they can quickly get a job, they still have to go through all the sexism and all the negative connotations that, you know, men sometimes bring to the workplace. But they also have a different set of needs as well. So across the board, it's hard for everybody to find employment, healthcare, and housing. So it's tough.
It is tough.
It's super tough.
For everyone. So tell us about some of the things that you do around specifically, you know, helping people with employment or with career development.
Definitely. So we, let me go to my notes here. Reducing recidivism one person at a time is something that I've just most recently been saying, like over the last 6 months, because I've come to realize that I cannot reduce recidivism. That word is always a tongue tire. I can't reduce it for everybody, but if I can meet individuals where they're at and align my beliefs with whomever I'm speaking with and impact them, then that means we're reducing recidivism for this individual. And one person may need a suit and tie. Another person may need resume writing skills, or another person may need just some career etiquette and how to sit and speak and how to answer the question that you've been incarcerated, or kind of delve into what that looks like pertaining to the job that you're applying for. We do mock interviewing. So oftentimes when I have the time, when I'm not working a regular full-time job,
we forget to say.
Oh, Lord, right. A full-time job and,
and a nonprofit.
And a nonprofit. And a co-parent. And, you know, anyway. So, We have the career and life skills training and the mock interviewing, to where I sit down with the individuals and we pretend like we're going to do an interview, and I'm really in their face asking them the tough questions, really challenging to think critically and how to not answer a question, but how to avert and answer it in a way to where it doesn't seem like they're stupid or they're not being truthful about their past. And I also say transparency and being truthful really is the best way, because that way you put all your stuff out front and you don't have to go back and say, oh, did I answer that? Or how did I say that? So mock interviewing, career and life skills training, volunteering is a really big piece at all that I stress a lot, because I feel the more people that you have that can support you, and the more people that you know, and the more relationships that you build in your community, are just, it's going to help you in the long run.
So you invite the people that you serve to actually go to places, volunteer, do community participation, etc.
Yes, like for example, Center for Intercultural Organizing.
Okay.
A couple of years ago, I had a couple of guys, a few ladies come down, and we worked on, I believe it was driver's license reform, and it was the marriage equality campaign. And I felt it was important for them to not only just vote, but learn about the structure of politics and how it happens and how you can mobilize communities and organize communities and petition and canvas. I wanted them to see the importance of that and then the importance of their voice, but also collectively how empowering and how powerful we can be if we're all on the same page. So just getting back kind of to like the volunteering, like you want more people to say nice things about you than bad things about you. And if you're more visible in the community or in the faith-based community or the nonprofit world, and the more people that you know, the more relationships that you build, it's only going to enhance you. And then in that, you also help reduce the stereotypes of what a former felon or ex-con or somebody that has a background, you reduce that stereotype and people kind of do away with what they thought, oh, those people are bad or, you know, and it just, it helps them to also feel like they have a sense of self-worth because you take ownership. And if you're volunteering with whatever organization, you start to take ownership of that and you start to invest, you know, your time and your money or your resources into that. It's like gardening. I'm not a gardener.
I am.
I know you are. I've had some great meals at your house. When am I coming over again for the next one?
Soon.
Side note. But like gardening, like you want to have, you have to have the right soil. And you can let me know because I'm not a gardener if
yes.
I'm saying this right.
Yeah,
but you have
need
to have
the right soil.
The right soil, the right tools, the right land, the right mindset. It has to be the right time of year. And when you go and you sweat and you labor and you toil over that garden or and you're planting seeds, you want to reap the fruits of your labor. And when you invest so much time and so much money to something, you take more ownership of it and you care about it more. So that's volunteering is important because I want them to give something of yourself, and but also leave your cup open so you can also be filled back up. And it's
Oh, that's beautifully said.
Reciprocity, like, you know.
What has been the reaction of the men and women and youth that engaged through your services when you tell them, okay, we're going to go volunteer today, and then after the volunteering, how do they stand?
Some of them are like, you know, I'll never do it again.
I'm not working for free.
Right, I'm not working for free. I'm not sitting up here canvassing and you have negative reactions, you have positive reactions just with anything. But I also try to get them to see, like, you have to believe in someone else if you want someone else to believe in you. And let's not say what we're not going to do and what we don't think is right, because that same attitude that we have, someone is thinking and could be thinking and saying the same thing about you. So I always try to be as real and transparent as I can with the men and women and the youth that I work with, because it's, you know, it's what they respect. And kids will call you out just like that. Youth will call you out. You know, if you BSing them, they're gonna be like, hey, bro, like, that's not the truth. Like, you know, for example, or whatever. I can't pull nothing out of my hat right now, but they'll call you on your stuff and they'll make you actually say, oh, well, yeah, you're right. So being real and transparent and honest is really the only way I know how to be when I'm interacting with these people, because they've had so many barriers and been told so many lies and had so much BS put upon them to where they don't. They don't have time to hear an additional pipe dream.
Yeah.
Or go apply there. They'll hire you, and you go over there and you're putting in applications and or not, and you won't get hired. So there's the shining silver lining is, you know, give and it'll be given back to you without trying to sound all biblical. And that's what I hope that they understand.
Yeah, I think that, you know, there's definitely lots of truth as to what you say, especially, you know, when you talked about, you know, keep your cup, you know, half empty so that you can be, you know, filled as well. I think that when we volunteer, yes, we do give, but then we receive also a lot. And I think that very often that's just not something that's talked about as much.
I mean, I grew up, you know, volunteering in different ways, whether it was feeding the homeless, you know, with my parents or church or just, you know, so it was something that I was already doing that I didn't really see the value in it until I got older, until I kind of got fell through the cracks and now doing this. So It's kind of full circle a little bit.
Yeah. And actually, are you looking for volunteers for SCAFE as well?
Absolutely. Let me get in the mic. Absolutely. We are looking for volunteers. Like, however, whatever capacity folks want to serve in, you may be a writing coach. You may be, you may own a lawn service. You may just want to come in and talk to the men and women about how to interact with each other in a relationship building and or talk about safe sex, whatever. All those things are extremely needed, and I can't do it by myself.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
I have been, but
yeah. Talk a little bit about what your message is to the businesses and the organizations out there that do not hire people with a criminal history. What do you want them to know? So whether it's like, you know, through, you know, nonprofits, businesses, or even just organizations that are doing background checks even for their volunteers, because some organizations do that.
Yes. So I'll start by saying SCAFE, and forgive me, radio audience. Hopefully I will name everybody, but I'm sure I won't. But right off the top of the head, Urban League, AFL-CIO, SCAFE, WorkSource, I believe. We've all come together to the table to, we've come to the table to remove the ban the box question off of applications. And a lot of employers, and businesses have that on there. So when you get down, like, oh, have you been convicted of a, yep, check. So we wanted to make sure that, you know, we were able to take that off to reduce and eliminate an additional barrier. So when people are filling applications, they're not actually, those applications aren't just pushed to the side, or those resumes aren't just pushed to the side. Actually, they get a chance to interview, show their skill set, and interact with the employer. And then that employer can make a decision whether they want to hire them or not. And contingent upon the hiring, of course, they're going to do a background check. A lot of businesses, I come to find, they don't know much about a work order tax credit or the Second Chance Act, which is basically saying you can hire men, women, folks with disabilities, people who have felony records, that you can hire them, and that you can also receive a tax break. And I won't go into all the numbers, but those are some things that have been in place in Oregon for a while, and a lot of employers and businesses don't know about it. So
can you repeat them? So the Second Chance Act?
There's the Second Chance Act, and there is the Work Order Tax Credit.
So maybe people can look them up if they're interested.
Yeah, I have some language here, but it's all jargony, and I don't want to do all that right now. but, you know, overall, like, we pay a little over $32,000 a year to house an inmate for a year. That's what it costs to house.
In Oregon.
In Oregon. Now, inside of correction facilities, a lot of the jobs people do are, let me get to my notes, it's welding, it's gardening, it's illustration of art, problem solving skills, working in a warehouse, food service, janitorial and custodial. All those jobs that are inside of correction facilities are usually what everyone, you know, what every person is working. So I would love for there be a venue or a segue, so when people are being released, that we already have these jobs in place. All this new construction going around between Lake Oswego to Williams Avenue, these new apartment buildings and restaurants and things of that nature. It would be sweet if we could actually get some of those men and women and youth into some of those positions, whether it's a janitorial position, whether it's going downtown and getting a scholarship to Le Cordon Bleu, just creating those opportunities. So the work that they've done while they were paying their debt to society, they can transition and get out and do some of the same work. And that's, I've been talking about this for a while and coming up with different ideas and real tangible things to hand to employers or legislative folk who may not be aware of it, and that, you know, this can actually boost the economy. This is a great way to keep the economy growing, because we have people being released every day, every year. We have a lot of people getting out. We have a lot of people returning. But if we can tap into their skill sets and the kind of work that they do and create these opportunities, and we don't even have to create them because they're already out there. But if we could operate from a work order tax credit or a Second Chance Act and have these positions,
or just from the kindness of your
heart, or just from the kindness of your little raggedy heart, you know,
show a little compassion.
Yeah, show the compassion. Be, you know, be emphatic. But if, you know, that would be a great way to kind of keep people employed, and that way we can reduce recidivism just with that alone.
Yeah. We're going to keep talking about some of the things that SCAFE is doing. I wanted to take a short musical break to listen to your still beautiful voice, but
thank
singing
you so much.
This time. We're going to listen to Flatline, and this is the Emmanuel Price Project, which you can find on iTunes. This is Bread and Roses. I'm Del Crescenzo. We'll be back in just a minute. Listening to Bread and Roses, that was Flatline. So this is the Emmanuel Price Project.
Flat
check it
line.
Out. Flatline. Sorry.
No, you said it right.
Yeah, I said it right.
I just
okay.
like your accent.
Okay. check it out on iTunes. Just great. We're talking about your music history here. Mm-hmm. But tonight we are talking about something much more serious, and that is the nonprofit organization that Emmanuel Price has founded called SCAFE. Second Chances Are for Everyone. So this is SCAFE, and you can check them out. .org would be the website. And they also have a fundraiser, second annual fundraiser coming up on the 8th of November. So please support if you are able to. So we talked a lot about what leads to recidivism and what SCAFE is doing to impact that or change that. But you're also very concerned with the role that our education system is playing in populating prisons and jails. Can you talk a little bit about what we call the school-to-prison pipeline phenomenon? What is that?
The school-to-prison pipeline phenomenon is a mess. Mm-hmm. Started from a zero-tolerance policy, and, without getting into the weeds of the details of it, it basically just says that historically, African-American kids, Latino kids, have been suspended, expelled, secluded, and pushed out of schools. And that also helps them, or hurts the music or something, mm-hmm. that also keeps them from graduating. Mm-hmm. And if you can't read at a third grade reading level, then they have a place for you in prison. Basically, there's a prison forecast, and if you don't have the skills at that third grade reading level, yeah. Then guess what? We have a bed for you.
They can predict right. that you, chances are you'll end up chances, in prison.
Exactly. So that's some of the work that I do now with a great organization, Resolutions Northwest. I have to shout out everybody over there, mm-hmm. Portland Parent Union. Have to shout those guys out as well. But the school-to-prison pipeline is real, and most recently I've been working in schools to help reduce that as a restorative justice mm-hmm. coordinator to make sure that staff and students know that they have an additional outlet and that we want all kids to have academic success. Mm-hmm. But if we are continuing to kick them out and push them out because we don't understand them or because some may be louder or some may be on an IEP, which is an individual education plan. Mm-hmm. And if we're just not culturally sensitive to other ethnicities and cultures, we operate out of a place. And I don't want to say we, but folks operate out of a place of privilege and not to say this is the end all be all way to do things, but there needs to be a change because kids are being locked up. Their educational needs are not being met. Mm-hmm. They're being pushed out of classrooms, suspended and expelled. And then the parents come in and they're not received. They're not getting a warm welcome when they come into the school. Yeah. So not only are the kids being pushed out, the parents are being pushed out as well. Mm-hmm. An example, there was a gentleman who wanted to be involved in his son's field trips and things of that nature. But because he had a felony background mm-hmm. and he just wanted to come in and volunteer.
Yeah.
Because he had a felony background, he was not able to go and assist his son and go on all the field mm-hmm. trips. And so he missed out on everything that he missed out with his father. Mm-hmm. And one of the statements that he made is, I just want to give my son what I didn't have. Mm-hmm. And the school to prison pipeline is related to that mm-hmm. because there's so much push out where we don't give people second chances. Myself, mm-hmm. I was pushed out from the schools. I was hired to do this specific job mm-hmm. and then it was taken from me. Mm-hmm. And then I was rehired and then it was taken from me again. So not only are you not helping me help the community, but it's a ripple effect. Now that I'm now another man that has been introduced to these kids' life is ripped away. Mm-hmm. There's more trust and more relationships broken. The schools don't have any support. The kids don't have any support. The staff don't have any support. And where am I at? I'm at home twiddling my thumbs, thinking of ways to...
All of this because of your background.
All of this because of my background.
Your criminal background.
Yes. So, again, the school to prison pipeline not only affects young children, it affects adults as well. Mm-hmm. And if we want to make sure that these kids are supported and that they're graduating and that we're bridging the achievement gap, then we need to have a policy. I believe we need to have a policy change from the top down to make sure that mm-hmm. this doesn't happen, because it not only happened to me, it happened to folks way before me. Mm-hmm. But here I am working in the school system to make sure that we can reduce those barriers and to give teachers and staff a different way of interacting with students.
And they hire you for that.
Specifically for that. I was called out of the class mid restore as mm-hmm. I was restoring the hell out some justice. I got called out of class to say, hey, you got to leave immediately. Not to mention my daughter goes to the same school that I was mm-hmm. offering this service for. So it sucked because mm-hmm. I was there for her. I was there for the staff and the kids as well. But here I am paying for something that happened 18 years ago when I was 19. Mm-hmm. And now I'm 36 and this still continually haunts me, which is why I created SCAFE, because instead of society holding my felony over my head, I said, how about I hold my own felony over my head? You know what I'm doing. This is the work that we're doing. And SCAFE is that. So mm-hmm. I'm not going to be embarrassed about my past, but in fact, I'm going to use that and help people who have the same barriers or who don't have the same barriers that I have.
Hmm. What are for you the consequences of having, so many young people criminalized and channeled through the prison system? What are really truly the implications for our society as we do that?
We just want to punish folks. It seems like we want
only
more
certain folks, though.
Yeah, only certain folks. And if black and brown, mm-hmm. Low income immigrants and so on and so forth. And we tend to send people to prison rather than fix our educational system, rather than provide new books with the right language, mm-hmm. saying that Beethoven wasn't was a person of color, mm-hmm. or just small things like that. We are so good at making sure that we're making an example out of somebody, and that instead of that $32,000 that we spend to build or to house a person for a year, let's take that and let's invest that back into our schools, our communities, these damn bike lanes everywhere, which is fine because I'm a bike rider, mm-hmm. but I could see where that money could have been used in a different way. And I'm not an urban renewal planner, so I'm not hating on the bikes or the bike lanes, but I just see a lot of change in the neighborhood to where all these new projects are coming up and going forth, but we still have high absenteeism rates. We still have high dropout rates. We still have poverty and homelessness with Black, white, Latino, LGBTQ. Mm-hmm. We have a lot of people that are affected by a lot of decisions that are made up top, which trickle down to low-income communities. And our kids are really suffering the most. Just like the example I just gave, as I was hired to work and I was yanked from their lives. Mm-hmm. They're suffering. I can go get another job. I can pump gas. Mm-hmm. I could stand on the corner and tap dance with a bucket or whatever. But you know, the kids are the one that suffer the most. And that, you know, that hurts me the most, is because I didn't want to be the next person to come into their life and just be like, oh yeah, I'm here for a week, I'm here for a couple of years, and I didn't plan on it, but be snatched out. And now they have to deal with, you know, that again. Mm-hmm. Nobody to talk to, nobody to trust, nobody to listen to, another Black or brown person in their life that's been yanked out. So we value punishing people. We don't value education. We value making an example out of people when we shouldn't, you know, because we're all in this together. And sometimes it just it just doesn't make sense sometimes. Like, how do we get so far away from what we're innately equipped with? Love, compassion, empathy, respect,
money.
Trust. Right. Money.
That's money. Yeah.
And that's what it all boils down to. So,
yeah, as we started this conversation talking about what do we send people to prison?
Right.
It's like, hey, a small number of people are making huge amount of money out of this.
Out of
$38,000. Like, I don't know what are the amounts that we actually invest in the education of a child, you know, here in Portland, Oregon.
Right.
But most places is like between, you know, $8,000 to $12,000 a year, right? Like, that's triple that we actually, as tax dollars, are paying
to lock folks up who are not, they're not even getting educated. They're not even being corrected inside of a correctional facility, but we're dumping $32,000 into, you know, individuals, into the privatization of prisons. And just, it doesn't make sense when you could take that $32,000 a year and break that down, which is roughly $2,700 a month. Let's get people and put people back to work so they can earn their own $32,000 instead of us continually building prisons, locking people up. They get out, they're worse off than what they were before they went in. And then we're sitting around like, oh, well, I guess we'll just lock them up again. No, not right.
This has been a fascinating conversation. We'll have to continue this conversation, have you back on a different time. As we wrap up, let's just tell people, folks, how they can contact you, whether they are businesses, they would like to partner with you, volunteer support.
Definitely. Please contact me, www.scafe.org, S-C-A-F-E.org. My number is 503-866-6520. You could email me at info@scafe.org. And a call to businesses, local nonprofits, faith-based organizations, everybody. I would really encourage any business, small, grand, corporate, large, to think about a time where you were given a second chance to do something. Even this morning, if I could have taken I-5 and gotten to work a little bit quicker, I probably should have. Instead, I'm taking the back streets and got to work a little bit late. But remember that you also had opportunity to have a second chance. And if you had that opportunity to extend and give it to someone else, do that, because a lot of people are more in need than we are. And we're so used to going home and turning on our TV and watching cable and going down the street to the restaurant to grab a quick bite of food. But the call to businesses is to think about hiring folks. Let them come in and volunteer. You don't necessarily have, we're not saying give somebody a job, but let them volunteer. Get to know that individual. open up your heart, open up your mind, look into the Work Order Tax Credit or the Second Chance Act, and think about what you can do for humanity, not just because you're going to save in some tax dollars. Mm-hmm. People are hurting. People want to work. People want to get back and reclaim their lives. So businesses, please reach out and remember that second chances are for everyone. Hell, I need one.
Thank you, Emmanuel,
for
giving Bread and Roses a second chance and being back a second time.
No doubt.
Thank you all for listening. Thank you so much, Chris, for engineering.
Thank you, Chris.
Please contact us, Facebook, KBOO Bread and Roses, or kboo.fm/Bread and Roses. Have a great evening. We're going to end with a track, Mississippi. It's still from the Emmanuel Prize Project. KBOO program is made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Siren Nation, presenting Melao de Cuba, Luz Elena Mendoza, and Edna Vasquez, Friday, November 7th at the Alberto Rose Theater. Melao de Cuba combines traditional Cuban music with elements of Afro-Cuban and Spanish music. More information at albertorosetheater.com. New York City.